Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Man there trying to stop Drogba getting himself into further trouble.
That's not a bad ball for Pelé on the right side. It's Carlos Alberto. And what a great goal that was! Carlos Alberto!
Maradona just walked away from Huddle then. Maldano. Open.
Met het balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan! Dennis Bergkamp!
Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp!
Oh! Frank de Boer speelt de bal naar Dennis Bergkamp! Die neemt de bal feilloos aan! En hij schiet de bal erin!
So hello and welcome back to the Scoreless Thriller podcast. And my guest this week is Philippe O'Rourke, who's written a book called Forgotten Football Clubs, 50 Teams Across the World, Gone But Never Forgotten. Philippe, do you want to briefly introduce yourself and also maybe why you decided to write the book?
Yeah, what's up, Alex? Glad to be here. The book, Forgotten Football Clubs, 50 Clubs Across the World, basically originated from Forgotten Clubs blog that I have. And it's just about football clubs that have either gone bust, defunct, or merged with other football clubs. Some of them are gone completely, and some are now Phoenix clubs that fans have kind of resurrected. In the book, I basically go all over the world, mostly Europe, because it was just easier to kind of do the European clubs. But I have ventured into South America, North America, Australia, South Africa, Asia, and places like that. And I interview fans from these countries, whether they used to be fans of the actual club or just football experts in their respective leagues. So, for example, a Belgian club I covered, I interviewed the lads who run the Belgian football podcast, which is quite popular and successful over there, as well an Austrian club I covered, Graz AK. I interviewed the other Bundesliga podcast. The lads there are quite knowledgeable on Austrian football. I think there's about 25 interviews overall out of the 50. Obviously, I couldn't get interviews for everybody because some clubs literally are forgotten.
Yeah, it's in the name. And was there a club or a story that kind of kicked off you writing the blog? Like, what was the first kind of story that kind of sparked your interest in the in this topic?
Yeah, I mean, being from Ireland, I kind of looked into it, and there's 42 clubs in Ireland that have gone left League of Ireland, basically. I used to be a fan, a Sporting Fingal fan, being from Swords and being from Fingal, and they're one of the clubs that unfortunately are no longer with us. And I used to travel around Ireland following them when I was 18, 19. Great memories for the 4 years they were around. They won the FAI Cup, the Irish Domestic Cup. They played in Europe and stuff like that. And they feature in my book, of course. I'd be lynched here in Swords if I didn't put them in the book.
And when you're writing the book, how strict were you with the sort of forgotten clubs term? Because I think you mentioned a bit, but some of them are kind of Phoenix clubs. Like, what is the, was there a kind of working definition that you kind of worked with? Well, actually, well, this one is okay because it splintered off to this one. Or how did you kind of work around that? Because, you know, a lot of most clubs since their history have kind of changed their name or changed their location at some point or something. So how did you kind of work around that?
Interestingly, when I started the blog, as I said, I started with Irish clubs, and when I ventured kind of abroad, so I went to kind of interview people from Scotland and England and stuff like that, and then into kind of mainland Europe. But when I mentioned forgotten clubs, one of the first things they say is, oh, we're not a forgotten club. So I have to have a criteria for a forgotten club. So the criteria basically is that they, at one point or another, the original club that was formed has either merged or has changed name or become defunct at some stage. So, for example, Accrington Stanley, now they're not in the book, but at one point in time, they did go defunct. Even though they're still around now and they're playing the Football League, they did go defunct and they had to set up again. Other clubs that merged, there's loads of them in my book. I can't think of any off the top of my head, to be honest. But there's plenty of them that have merged. And that would qualify as a forgotten club. So basically, if the original entity isn't around anymore, that's what a forgotten club is, in my criteria.
Mm-hmm. And how did you go about sort of researching it? Obviously, you kind of knew some of the stories from maybe Irish or football in the UK and stuff, but when you were looking for more clubs to cover, what was your approach to kind of find, okay, if I want to find a club maybe from Belgium, say, or something, and research it that way?
Yeah, I mean, so what I'm doing is at the moment I'm actually building a database of every qualified forgotten club, in my opinion, from all around the world. So going through each country, some obviously countries have more than others. Some countries, literally, you can't find any. I actually have here in my home, in my room, I have a big huge map, world map in front of me. And I kind of just went to each country and kind of just selected out the most interesting stories or the story that pops out from that country. Like, so for example, Sweden, there's a club in Sweden that is basically a doppelganger or a copy of Juventus. And they were around for, I think, about 50 years now. They're gone, obviously, now, and they feature in the book. But they were literally, they had the same crest, the same colours, jersey. They were called Juventus IF. And I think they were created in the 50s by Italian immigrants. So that kind of popped out straight away. There's other stories that kind of I tell because of their significance of the way football's going. So there's a club in Norway that features, you know, it's quite a short story. They're only around a few years, but it's called my pronunciation might be wrong here, but Stromahed. But basically, they were known as a soulless club. They were created by a business, basically, and they couldn't get any fans at all. They had no fans, and they were just around. And eventually, somebody bought them over. And when they were bought over, the people who bought them were like, well, this is a waste of money because there's no fans here. and it just went bust. So it just goes to show, you know, fans are quite important for football. So stuff like that, like I kind of put in a little bit of messages into it.
Was that just a vanity project, that club, or what was what was happening there?
Yeah, basically it was the person who owned it. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he kind of just wanted to own a football club. And there's loads of stories like that throughout my book, where, you know, owners just kind of, it's like a toy to them. And they just own a football club, they run into the ground, and they just kind of go, all right, well, that's it. Or they want success straight away. They basically want to run before they can walk. A bit like Spartan Fingal, who just pumped loads of money into it, won the FAI Cup, and then suddenly they have no money to pay the wages. Like, and unfortunately, football is a business as well. You have to get the balance right, and a lot of these clubs just didn't get the balance right, and that's why they went by the wayside. The clubs that had strong support, fan clubs like Chester that are featuring the club, they came back. And they're owned by the fans now, so it's great to see that sort of stuff. There's a lot of badly run clubs that feature in the book.
And is when you're looking at it, like in a kind of grand picture, is the consistent kind of story usually that they just ran out of money, or like they didn't have a support? Like, what is usually? Is there a consistent thread of that? That usually the clubs are just badly run business wise, means they get forgotten, or what is kind of some of the key themes that they kind of deal with?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I tried to kind of pick out clubs that like had different. Like, I didn't want to keep going, oh, this club kind of were ran badly and that's why they went bust. So I tried to pick out kind of more original stories than that. But in general, yeah, it was mostly kind of eccentric. Owners and chairmen that kind of just got away from themselves, or not even owners, kind of businesses. Like for one example, the Japanese club I feature, they played in the lower leagues of Japanese football. My pronunciation mightn't be right, but Osaka Kuroshi. We're owned by a hotel chain, basically, and their plan was to get to the J-League. They never got there, but they pumped a lot of money into it, and they never made it. There's a little spin-off to that, that another club actually were formed from that club because there was disagreements, and that other club at the moment actually play, I think it's the J2 League, I think it's called. So there's all these little stories. Another one is the Chinese club, Jiang. Again, my pronunciation is probably terrible. Jiang Suning, who were around since the 50s, never won the league. They were bought by the hotel company Suning, and that's why Suning is in their name. They won the league in 2021, and then that was it. they just sold.
The job was completed.
Yeah, it was kind of like a FIFA game, like, you know, we kind of won the league, I don't even want to play anymore, and that was it. Like
Fabio got the hotels on the map.
Yeah, basically, like Fabio Capello managed them, Ramirez, remember him, who used to play for Chelsea, he played for them. So they were a big club in China, like, and it just, that was it, gone. The Suning just decided to follow the football department, and off they go. So it was quite weird. There's all sorts of stories. Again, there's a Turkish club who are kind of still around, but they're not still around. Quite briefly, I'll just explain that the two chairmen of these clubs, Kayaspor, again, the pronunciation is probably wrong, Kayaspor. So there's two Kayaspors kind of in the city. And the two chairmen just at one point, one season, just decided to swap seats. And it's better explained in the book, but I have to write the story about four or five times because I couldn't get my head around what actually was going on. It was quite weird. It was weird. They kind of like, so for example, just imagine Manchester City and Manchester United, and suddenly the two chairmen of the clubs went, all right, we're going to swap. And they didn't change names or anything like that. It was just the two lads just kind of just swapped.
Okay. The players didn't change. It was just a weird job. The owners.
Yeah, basically, just the owners just went, all right, I'll take your job, you take mine. And one obviously then went bust and the other one carried on. Like, it was so weird.
That is strange. I mean, maybe you can speak to this from personal experience, but I find it very interesting, the idea of what does a fan do when their club goes bust? Like, do they sort of go support their crosstown rivals with, you know, yeah, like, just because, I mean, their club has gone bust? Like, what was the experience of when you spoke to other fans, from the fans with the interviews, like what they did once their club went bust? Did they find another team to support, or was that them just kind of done with football?
No. That was one of the questions I would ask when on my blog. So obviously you don't support so-and-so anymore. So who do you support? And they'd answer and say, oh, look, some of them would say I support, say, for example, Monaghan United fans here in Ireland would say, oh, I kind of just watch out for Rovers, but it'll never be the same. Because once you're a fan of a football club, like Sporting Fingal, for example, I now follow St. Pat's here in Ireland. And now I love football, so it's not a bother to me, but it's not the same as supporting that club. And there's a sense of sadness in it sometimes. A lot of people you can hear it when, say, you're talking on the phone, or you can even sense it when you're reading it, when you're doing an interview by text and stuff like that, that there's a sense of loss. I think there's actually one person, I think it was actually a Man United fan, who actually described it as a bereavement. You know, it was like a death in the family when Man United kind of stopped playing football in League of Ireland. So there you go, there's quite strong emotions attached to it. And I kind of say that in the introduction of the book, I think.
Yeah, and what did you do when Sporting Fingal went? How did you feel when Fingal went bust?
Well, I kind of saw the writing on the wall a year before, because I was a kind of journalist. I was writing for a website, an Irish website called Extra Time, and I was a kind of investigating League of Ireland stuff, and I found out that they were paying certain players certain amounts. And when you put the figures together, you know, you're getting 500 fans, home fans, and you're paying players $2,000 a week.
Yeah.
the figures don't match up. So I kind of called it out. I was told to kind of be quiet. And then lo and behold, it happened. It was disappointing. Look, Swords, where I'm from, is a huge area. The town has a population of 50,000, and then you have the Fingal area, which is even bigger, has 250,000 people, and we don't really have a football club. It's an argument, though, that people say, you're from Dublin, there's plenty of Dublin clubs, but the closest club to me is Shelburne, and that's about a 40-minute journey away from me. I did try to get a football club here 2 years ago with the help of other people from abroad, called Dublin County, set up, but unfortunately we failed because we couldn't get the stadium to play League of Ireland football. So that was also disappointing. But the Sporting Fingal, it was great memories and stuff like that, but it's disappointing that they're not around anymore. I went and then started supporting St. Pat's, who are actually from South Dublin, but the only reason I support them is because when I was with Extra Time, they used to send me out there to report on games, and I kind of just got myself familiar with the ground and stuff like that. It's a nice little old school ground. I would just start supporting them.
Okay. But would you say that your connection with them is anything like that it was with Sporting Fingal or before, or is it just like if Sporting Fingal came back or something, like you said, your allegiance to Pats would probably end?
Yeah, no, 100%. I'd be back with Sporting Fingal, unfortunately. If any Pats fans are listening, they'll probably call me a pro-co, but that's just the way it is. Like, I'm a North Sider, so I'm North Dublin, and proper Swords lad. Any Swords club, even if it was a new Swords club appeared, I'd be supporting them, because that's what I've lived here all my life. I live here now. And that would be just that. I'd still have a fondness of Pats, but to be fair, I'll be at Pats games and they'll be sagging off the north side. Like, I won't chant the chants because there's quite a few explicit words in it. Mm. But yeah, they sag off the north side, and I'm kind of like, well, I can't join in that because I'm a north sider.
Keep quiet.
Yeah, I just kind of keep my mouth shut for that one. If a club ever appeared here in Swords, and maybe it will in the future, I would have to support them.
Yeah. Was there any club that from the research that the story sort of maybe stuck with you a bit? Like you could really relate to their story, that it felt kind of very familiar?
There is quite a lot of the clubs like Sporting Fingal that they kind of had a lot of success quite instantly and then just went. So they were only around for 4 or 5 years. I'm trying to think in my head which clubs would match that kind of criteria. Off the top of my head, I can't really, but because there is so many, 50 clubs. But there is quite a few that kind of went in, won a cup or won a league, and then went, right, that's it, and that was it. He went bust, yeah. And didn't come back. So in that regard, I would have felt the pain that their fans had felt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting topic because, I mean, on the surface level, you kind of assume that looking at these clubs which have kind of gone bust, that it would be very sad for fans. But I guess some of the stories of sort of revival and Phoenix clubs is kind of quite hopeful and also quite optimistic, because you kind of see, like you said, like growth to sort of fan-owned clubs and also fans kind of taking initiative. So it doesn't have to necessarily be a sad story.
Yeah, when I set out doing Forgotten Clubs, I always try to put a positive spin on it. I know it's quite hard, but I do try to put a positive spin on it. So while Sporting Fingal went bust and stuff like that, me and my mates travelled around Ireland and had great memories doing it. Other clubs, like you say, like, for example, Chester again, they are now fan-owned and stuff like that. They're quite happy to be like that, that they don't have a sugar daddy or an owner dictating, you know, how their football club is run, and they'll never be in danger of kind of going bust. Now, that's not entirely true, because there is fan-owned clubs out there that have gone bust and stuff like that, but it's less likely to happen, especially as fans just want the best for their football club. Whereas if an owner, you know, a one-person owner is there, they're more inclined to care more about the business side and the money and stuff like that. As I said, you have to really get a mix of the two. And unfortunately, there's plenty of football clubs out there that haven't. There's you know, happy endings in a lot of the stories. As I said, Chester, another club, Aldershot, who are obviously from England as well.
Yeah.
They're still about. For example, Italian club Palermo, they feature. They've had a rocky history, there's plenty of other clubs that have, as I said, gone, but have come back, even in lower leagues and stuff like that. Grass, AK, who, you know, at one point beat Liverpool in the Champions League. I think it was the year Liverpool went on to win the Champions League in Istanbul. They went bust. They're now on their way back. They're in the second division of Austria at the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, if they get promoted, you know, the Graz Derby, the big rivals, from Graz, you know, that'll happen again. That's something that their fans who now own the club are looking forward to having on a regular basis in the future. But they do it with an air of caution, because they know how quickly, you know, it can all turn sour.
Yeah, exactly. Philip, I think that's most of the questions I've got covered. How can people... Do you want to explain a bit when the book is out and how they can get their hands on it, where it's available?
Yeah, it's out on the 6th of February, so in about 2 weeks' time. It's available on Amazon, WH Smith, Eason's, all online. You can pre-order it now. If you pre-order it now, I think you get a discount on it. And it's it's all there. You've got the Pitch Publishing website. They're obviously a publishing company that are publishing the book, and they'll have all the details and stuff like that. So if go ahead and buy it, as well as the money that any money that I make is actually going to go to a charity called Let's Fund It, which is a charity here in Ireland, a great charity that gives to kind of organize sports organizations, old people's homes and stuff like that, kind of facilitates, you know, books and footballs for football clubs and stuff like that.
Oh, that's brilliant. And I mean, congratulations, Philip, on the book. From what I've read, I really enjoyed it and found it really, really, really interesting. What are you, I mean, you spoke a little bit about earlier, but what are you sort of trying to take the Forgotten Clubs project forward in the future? Are you trying to expand it to more clubs and stuff? Or what are you, how are you taking the website forward in the future?
Yeah, the website itself, I'll probably become more active. I used to have a team of writers I used to write, but they've all gone off to do individual projects. For example, Jeff Webb has actually wrote a book called Lost Clubs in Scotland, bringing a book, basically this Forgotten Clubs version of Scottish clubs. Another lad, Ross Kilvington, is writing a book on the World Cup 98. And then there's Bent, who also brilliant writer. He is doing a project with Luxembourg football on Twitter and stuff like that. I'm going to try get the blog up and running a little bit more frequent. I am planning to do a second book, Forgotten Clubs, 50 Clubs Across the World, Part 2, I suppose it'd be called, or maybe another 50 Clubs Across the World. Yeah. I haven't signed anything yet or anything like that, so we have to see how this one goes. But I've already picked out, I think, 30 of the clubs already. And I'm going to try get more kind of a variety of around the world. As I said, this one is mainly Europe. But the next one, hopefully I'll try venture into maybe Africa and Asia a little bit more.
Sounds brilliant, Philip. Yeah, good luck with moving the project forward. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Cheers, Alex. Glad to.
Podcast Network. American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.